Well, it's the best of. Thank you so much for a great year. Thanks for sharing it with a friend. Thanks for clicking through AdamCarolla.com and hitting the Amazon banner. And thanks for enjoying your mangria. And now, without any further ado, Bryan Cranston.
This is Carolla Digital.
Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California. This is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Bryan Cranston, and CNBC's Monica Mehta, plus Allison Rosen on news, and Bald Bryan on sound effects. And now, do not use Adam Carolla if you are nursing, pregnant, or may become pregnant. The most common side effect of Adam Carolla is nausea, upset stomach, and diarrhea. Some people have had changes in behavior or suicidal thoughts or actions while on Adam Carolla. Seek help if you notice abrupt changes in mood. Some people can have allergic or serious skin reactions to Adam Carolla. If you notice swelling of the face, neck, or head, stop taking Adam Carolla right away. Use caution while driving or operating machinery while on Adam Carolla. People taking aspirin therapy for heart conditions should not take Adam Carolla. Be sure to ask your doctor if Adam Carolla is right for you. Adam Carolla.
Wow. Dawson.
Hitting the post.
Look out, world. All righty. Exciting day. Good day, Allison Rosen.
Hello, Adam Carolla.
Good day, Bald Bryan.
What the fuck?
Runaway winner for today's top drop. That might have to be your next ringtone.
Really?
What the fuck?
It'd have to be used in certain social circumstances, but
sure,
it's very popular.
Sure, that's Joe Coy, right?
What the fuck?
Yeah, yeah. Bryan Cranston is going to be joining us at some point. Also, Monica Mehta will be here as well. She's has herself a book. She's been on the show before. We'll talk to her, all that. So a bunch of exciting stuff coming up. As far as Cranston goes, he's such a mensch. He has a little window. He's on the East Coast, and we're trying to figure out, as you could guess, this Sunday coming up, right? Breaking Bad. Big finale. Well, not
believe,
the finale,
yes,
but
the final
season. Episodes. The final episode, so that's fun. Remind me to bring up driving him to the Burbank Airport, I think season two or something like that. Great guy, great all-around individual, Bryan Cranston, be phoning in shortly.
He came on the radio show, remember, to promote season one of Breaking Bad, and it was like, why are you always in your underwear? And he's like, yeah, I guess I do in my underwear a lot. But like, it was this little show that no one really knew about because I didn't have this cult following yet. And then it became the hit that it is.
It is. I mean, there's an element that I still like about this industry, which is in a world filled with Kardashians.
This is the worst trailer ever.
Just, you know, shitty fast food joints that shouldn't be nearly as popular as they are. Still, somehow, if you build it, they will come. If you make a Breaking Bad or Girls, depending on what your taste is or depending on what your sensibilities are, you build a good show, people will come find you. And there's many instances, and I'm sure there's a few we don't know that should have made it, sloughed off and should have made it. But
Bertram.
Yes. You just make it. You put it on the air. You get consistent about it and people will come find you. And certainly the Emmys. Jeez, a whiz, three Emmys.
Does it give you hope that there will always be quality when it comes to the arts, for example, or whatever? Like, it feels like we're surrounded by the Kardashians and the whatnot of the world.
Mm-hmm.
It must be nice for them to be the benchmark for what's terrible. Yeah, the Kardashians and everything. But you know what I mean? Like, it feels like we're surrounded by it, but there will always be the Breaking Bad. There will always be the Mad Men or whatever, you know.
If you want to kill yourself, though, I think look at the numbers of something like the Kardashians versus what we consider quality art and well-done shows, like versus Mad Men or versus Breaking Bad.
Well,
Orange is the New Black.
Aston Martin is never going to sell as many units as crappy Pontiacs, but there'll still be room for that. Not an apples-to-apples comparison because of the price difference, but...
Right, I'm never going to get as many dates as some leggy blonde.
McDonald's, even a legless blonde. I mean, they need love, too.
Well, still.
Yeah. They can't run away. Oh, no, they can't. Oh, no, I won't be needing the zip tie. I mean, enough said. You're never going to beat McDonald's. You're just never going to beat McDonald's. They're going to sell the most units no matter what. But the Apple Pan can stay in business. You know, yeah, you know
local
what I'm saying?
LA burger place.
Yeah. Yeah. And there is your local version of that that is somewhere. Maybe it's In-N-Out Burger, whatever it is. There will always be a line when you pull up to an In-N-Out Burger. Out here in Los Angeles, at least, yes. There's always going to be a line of cars.
Domino's is going to outsell Pizzeria Bianco, the famous place in Arizona, 100-1, but the quality will always
reside. Oh, yes. Yes, yes, it will. All right. Let's see. Oh, yeah, Dr. Drew. Woo, big faux pas. Drew, big,
on
big.
On the air? Please tell me he's on the air.
No. Oh. We were, we did our podcast earlier today, and had some good stuff with Drew, and brought in a couple guests, had some good shows. And then I went and left and came back. And when I came back, not only were the peanuts out of the Ziploc bag altogether, they're in the peanut bag, the Trader Joe's bag they came in, which was then put inside a Ziploc bag.
The peanuts don't have a resealable top,
so
they're put inside
out of the complete thing removed, open like a mushroom cloud to the heavens.
Oh, my God.
And I walked around.
Doesn't he know you?
And I saw my pack o' lackeys on my sofa, you know, holding it down.
Stern had a whack pack. You have a pack of lackeys.
I got a pack of lackeys, not a whack right. pack.
Isn't that Chris's last name?
Pack of lackeys on the sofa, holding it down, eating. And I walked in through the front door and I said, what gives? What gives with the peanuts? Not only out of the Ziploc, but hard to tell. You can go to adamcarolla.com. You want to see the picture. It's open, wide open. And I said, who did this? And they all actually Chris wet himself. I just saw his jeans.
Ever expanding right. dark spot.
Yeah, that's right. I knew it wasn't him, but just the tone is enough to get him to wet. You know, it's a cultural thing. So I said, "Who did this?" And they all went, "Not me, boss."
The Mexican standoff. Hands went up. Fingers went up, pointing at each other.
And we discussed it. And we thought maybe it was a guest. Brad Williams was on our podcast along with Adam. I'm trying to think of the other comic.
Ray.
Adam Ray. Great guys. Said, Adam and Brad were here. I said, no. They left. And then I had some peanuts. And then I sealed it up. Oh, but wait a minute. Dr. Drew was doing his solo podcast when I left. This is the work of Dr. Drew. And it's weird to have Dr. Drew, by the way, do no harm. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Rancid peanuts is harm.
Right.
Yes. You took an oath.
Mm-hmm.
You took your Hippocratic oath to that cane with the snake on it. Rancid peanuts. That is harm, my friend. He's a nut for protein, pardon the pun, and he's always on the fly. So I know what he did. He took a handful, he pulled it out, and then even the great Dr. Drew, you see, his interaction with this experience and this sack of nuts was finished when the handful of nuts hit his hand. This is the part I'm trying to train people on, which is here's how people work. Peanuts inside sealed container. Me want peanut. Tobar wants peanut. Tobar open container. Remove peanut. Dump in Tobar's hair-covered, knuckled hands. Now I have what I want. Mission accomplished.
You raped the nuts.
Now what is the next thing I would like to do?
How does plastic bag remain airtight?
The next thing I would... No, there's no more thought about this.
Oh, I thought Tobar's trying to understand.
No, this part of the whole... This part of the dance is done.
Mm.
Now I have the nuts in my hand, and now I'm thinking... I have to get to the hospital, or I have to get home, or I have to get to work.
You have to go back to the cave.
I have to go back to the cave. But Tobar has his nuts. Now, what I'm trying to instill upon people is this is not completed yet. Because there are other folks who live in the village and who hang around the cave who want the nuts as well. Tobar must reseal the top. But in Tobar's brain, done. And I think that is evolution. That's... The difference between being a child and being an adult is that part where you take one step away and you go, oh, how would I like it if somebody did this to me, and then you, whether it's the gum on the ground or the piss all over the toilet seat or whatever it is, when you're done pissing, you're done pissing, but somebody else is coming into the bathroom and they may need to sit down.
Mm.
That's what I'm saying. How do you train that?
But
I'm
hasn't Drew heard you talk about this?
Thousands and thousands of times. Yes. Drew can go on autopilot with the best of them. He can definitely do that thing where he's texting, walking, eating, and doing a, you know, tricep extension or a, or a curl or something at the same time. Like, he, that's all he does, and that's what he says. Mm. He'll tell you, no, I was on the fly. And that's why it's muscle memory. That's why there's only one way to extract. It's like saying, I got in my car and drove away and forgot to close the door. You can't have that.
You need a nut alarm.
Nut alarm. Yeah. Sounds like a newer and involved, more evolved version of the booty call. Sending the nut alarm, baby. How you doing?
Are you sending a nut alarm again?
Better put on these protective glasses. I set my nut alarm to go off at midnight.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Do you really like me, or is this just a nut alarm?
Hey, you up?
All right. So that was Dr. Now, favorite tweets. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Mm-hmm.
You tweet him crap about passion fruit iced tea, Villaraigosa, and pizza with goat cheese. The stupid signs on Los Angeles streets. These are a few of his favorited tweets.
All right. Lots of cops hiding, and Gary and I both experienced this one. The tweet was an article about the like record number of folks that are being pulled over from here to Vegas, and how a lot of people, the average, I think, is 20 miles an hour over the posted speed limit, which doesn't mean we've all turned into renegade criminals. It means your fucking speed limit is too low for the vehicles that we're piloting. You get it? You will not. L.A. has been talking about a fucking train from L.A. to Vegas since I was in high school. That has never materialized.
It just got less likely, by the way. There's a news story about like some big thing came against it.
Sure. That's impossible. There's no possible way we could ever thread that desert needle and build a train from fucking LA to Vegas. So that's never going to happen. Thus, people choose to drive to Vegas. Fortunately, cars are safer. They're more aerodynamic. They're quieter. You don't physically know it. Look, when you're as I say all the time, if you're flying in a modern aircraft, you're going 550 miles an hour. You don't feel it. If you're flying in a crop duster and you're going 86 miles an hour, it fucking feels like you're going to vomit and your head's going to come off, right? Because you're open, things are flapping around. When you drive an old car, old VW or something like that, the wind is whistling through the windows and the car starts to shimmy when you get to 56 miles an hour and all that. Driving a modern car, even if it's an inexpensive modern car, windows rolled up, air conditioner on, listening to a little iPod, nothing. 85 miles an hour, 90 miles an hour feels like nothing, and you're going in a straight line of endless desert. And because the difference between really making time and obeying the speed limit can be as much as an hour and a half on that drive, people choose to make time, but some of it is they just drift off because it feels, I don't mean fall asleep, I just mean they're having a conversation, they're listening to music, and they feel like they're going at a very safe speed because they are going at a safe speed. But the department has a zero tolerance, by the way, zero tolerance never means $0 in their fucking wallet. It always means buku bucks. It's zero tolerance for whatever we're doing and fucking gobs of cash for them. I love we have a zero tolerance. By the way, there are people that are speeding through the desert on the way to Vegas and on the way from Vegas back to L.A. right now. So evidently your zero tolerance it's never zero tolerance. Zero tolerance means you catch everyone, or maybe it just means you will not tolerate it. But look, it's like, look, I have zero tolerance for fucking zits. Fine. Doesn't mean there's not going to be one that pops up on my ass tomorrow morning. It's a fucking loud, stupid proclamation. It's a stretch of the I-15 from Brim to the Strip, and they start in January. And it's a crackdown to change the way motorists drive that way. Motorists just drive the way. Let me explain something about safety. Guess who's most interested and or invested in the safety of the motorist? Can anyone guess? I would venture to say the human being that's operating the car, since they will be the one that is peeled off the pavement, and oftentimes family, friends, and other people. It's rare that you do the Vegas solo run. So you and the other guests inside of your automobile will be the ones that are most concerned with your safety.
They do stand to benefit.
They do stand to benefit.
Follow the money, Adam. I don't know.
It's marginal, but we will benefit. The person that is not Sam Kinison will benefit on the ride to Vegas. So I love the zero tolerance, but maybe it's time in a world where we have no rail. This promise of this transportation and this high-speed rail and all this stuff, ever since Walt Disney built his monorail back in like 1959, it's been, oh, there's a little glimpse at the future. Whose fucking future? Japan's future? Not our future. We got nothing. We have fucking bus drivers and old people in them, and that's what we have. But what we do, and what we do have, is gobs and gobs and gobs of fucking traffic, which is something that I would argue, listen, government, if you're going to fuck that up, fine. You've done a piss poor job of alleviating a huge problem in this city. Horrific. Saturday, I coached my kids' game on Saturday. I got on the 101 at 1:30 in the afternoon on Saturday, and it was fucking bumper to bumper. This is Saturday traffic now. So you guys have done a fucking piss poor job when it comes to alleviating traffic in the city. But what are you doing a fantastic bang up job at?
Ticketing people for going over 65, or apparently changing lanes without signaling. They're cracking down on that.
Yes. And here's the deal. When you feel like you're pent up, when it takes you 2 hours to get out of a city, you want to make it up at some point. And where you want to make it up is the open, safe highway. So how about we strike a compromise? You guys do something toward alleviating traffic in the city and then hand out the tickets on the highway. We were driving here yesterday. Down Forest Lawn Drive, there was the cop on the bike standing there with the radar gun in front of the Jewish cemetery. And then just around the bend is the CHP who parks under the bridge and sits there and waits for the people who are getting off the freeway coming the other direction to roll through the stop sign. And again, I know you guys are all fucking heroes, and it's always this thing where they go, hey, man, you don't vote for Measure B, and we're going to lose cops and firemen. You want to lose cops? You want to make the how about these two pussies? I'll put them up on the fucking chopping block.
Can we choose what cops to lose?
How about the fucking ones that are just handing out chicken shit tickets and raping everyone who lives in their fucking city? How about we lose those guys? Because they're not the crash unit going down with the Crips and the Bloods. They're standing along the fucking highway, standing. Not on their bike standing. The other guy is sitting under the overpass with his engine running. These cops are just sitting there putting fucking hours on their engine, doing nothing. So, yes, you could lose these guys. Always cracking down, always zero tolerance, always click it or ticket, always report drunk drivers, always in the name of fucking safety, never in the name. Just think, let's talk about safety. Let's talk about safety. Where do you think, just not even on a cosmic level, but a physiological level, you always say, and this is a new thing that everyone talks about in the medical community, stress. It's a killer. Stress is a killer. Stress, when you're stressed out, your body starts, you know, blah, 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 blah. Fine. You know how stressful it is to have a meeting in Santa Monica at 11 o'clock in the morning that starts at you know, 11, and it's a bunch of heavy hitters in some big mahogany boardroom, and you're just fucking in a parking lot on the 405, and you look at your clock, and it says, you know, 10:41, and you're totally fucking stressed out.
That kind of shit actually always almost makes me cry. It's the most powerless feeling ever.
Yes, and then you want to talk about danger. There's the part where I have to get off the freeway in a very sort of unsafe way and then do a OJ haul ass on Sunset Boulevard kind of move where it's like, I got to now fucking make up time. Like, I don't care. That move where you're going to miss your flight, like, cops be damned, I'm missing my flight.
Best not to compare yourself to OJ, but okay. Mm-hmm. I know where you're.
You drive by his house if you get off on Sunset there. All I'm saying is, how about the stress? How many accidents you think have been caused when people went and saw that, oh, shit, the 405 is completely a fucking parking lot, and tried to do that move where you cross four lanes and get off on Sunset real quick and then drive your ass off trying to make up the time to get to LAX? How much just stress? Like, how much does it cost? How much general whatever are we putting up into the atmosphere? How many of these carbon calories are we burning? What about vulcanized rubber? What about
not
everything?
To mention, I don't know that anyone really cares. Any officials care about this, but it puts everyone in a really bad mood. It makes everyone angry.
How many people have just been fucking shot? Like, just road rage. Like, you just parking lot, pissed off, running late, missing movie, missing flight, missing whatever, kids, ballet, whatever, recital, whatever it is. It's just that fucking feeling.
That's a waste of my time.
It's a weird, quiet, negative thing you can do to make everyone, and I don't care rich, poor, young, old, whatever your skin color is, whatever your socioeconomic background is, it's a way to make everyone in your city slightly more miserable.
And the weird thing is that we're all in it together, traffic, and yet it doesn't breed a sense of community. It breeds a lot of anger towards each other.
Yeah. No, I know. I had to fucking honk at the Denali in front of me coming here that just decided, nah, I'm not going to turn left when the signal, you know, that move when the signal. But we could educate these people. We could educate. Look, two on a, and again, the arrows turning red and everybody fucking confused and nobody knowing you can turn right on a red in this fucking town. There's so many things we could do. We choose not to, but don't worry. Anyone who's heading to Vegas to drop off some money can drop off a little more to the Henderson County Police Department because they will rape you along the fucking highway. What would be the big fucking complaint if we just raise the speed limit 10 miles an hour? I mean, what's it been? Has it been 40 years?
Well, that's the thing, is laws change all the time to accommodate new technology, like, you know, internet laws, you know, to register domains or internet whatever laws, DNA laws to exonerate criminals. Well, there's all sorts of laws they just change to accommodate the times.
Yes.
Why wouldn't this be the same?
I grew up in a car that was unsafe at any speed. Ralph Nader actually came with every model. And all he did was sit in the back seat with his arms folded and a disapproving look.
Just shaking his head.
Just
slowly.
Shaking his head going, I cannot believe you made this purchase. Yes, that was my mom's VW Squareback. But I drive a car that is frankly safe at 120 miles an hour. It just is. Anti-lock, everything, huge brakes, huge tires, huge suspension, like just huge everything from a safety standpoint. We could completely go up. And look, we could go up 20 miles an hour, but let's just make it 10 and fucking get things moving for Christ's sake. Also, speaking of cars, I was joking about my idea of Navageddon.
You were joking?
Well, I got a movie idea called Navageddon. Yeah, that's the part where the satellite goes rogue and it locks your car door. I start thinking about when I start seeing these car commercials where guys were letting their hands go from the wheel and the car was parking itself, you know, parallel parking itself. Mm. And I thought, And then you start seeing the OnStar commercial where the guy says, I've locked myself out of my Cadillac. And the chick goes, all righty. And she hits a button and boom, little dog's dick pops up inside the car and they get right in. And I thought, all coming from a satellite. And then, of course, the thought was Navigant, the rogue satellite, goes bad. You get in the car, car door locks, and then the car starts steering itself toward the Grand Canyon. Evil scientist. Somebody sent me a tweet that said some hackers used a laptop to control a car. Oh, yeah.
No way.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be on. First off, my wife's car, if you're coming up on someone too fast, will apply the brake by itself. If you are...
I like that.
It's fine. It did it for me once. I was on it. I wasn't texting. I was going to apply the brake, but not... They wanted me to apply it a little bit earlier.
It's like when you guys were younger, I'm sure they had the same thing I had. When you were taking your driving lessons, you know, your driving instructor, he had the brakes over there. And I actually had the driving instructor put the brakes on for me on a couple of occasions. I was learning how to drive, of course.
I would not know how that worked because I failed driver's ed. And so I could not take driver's training. So I had to take driver's training with an Armenian guy that I just basically gave $111 to, who had one of those schools who just drove his Honda and was like, "Is here, go here. Now pull in. Now go in." And we pulled into a 7-Eleven in Hollywood. And he's like, "Now wait here." And he went in. He came back with a Hustler in 3D. I'll never forget it. Hustler in 3D. Put his 3D glasses on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that just confuse you?
And was just looking at it. Well, and he's like,
the pee comes right at you.
Yeah, and he's like, "Now just back out and go left." You know, and that was it. All I needed was his piece of paper that said we've driven around for a little while.
I feel like looking at a Hustler in 3D while being driven around by a student driver is a recipe for car sickness.
Well, I can make a
illegal.
I can make a regular Hustler 3D if I missed the wrong turn or mistake the gas for the brake or vice versa. You know, I can take that Hustler and put it in your face. I can take the whole dash and put it in your face. So isn't it weird, too, when you're young or you're just like, I guess the nice guy with the accent wants a Hustler. Like that. I didn't judge.
Sure.
There was no Craigslist or report or anything where I was going, well, that's a minus 2-star move right there.
What's on Yelp is like, this guy was unprofessional.
Yeah, and I sure as fuck wasn't going to go home and like tell anyone in my family. Like, what do I want to get into this line of questioning for, you know? All I needed was to drive him around for like 2.5 days, and he would give me this piece of paper and get his Hustler.
If you had been if had been female, I wonder what if you would have done that.
Ooh,
Gary's nodding.
I don't know. I think his deal was, it's my car. You need to drive it X amount of miles, you need X amount of seat time. I need a Hustler.
He needs meat time.
Yeah, we need to work this out. And I do have that gene of, as long as you're driving, may as well, you know, drive around and take me on my appointed rounds. You know, like, I got errands to run. What's the difference between you just driving in a circle and you driving to the...
Right, with purpose.
7-Eleven.
Two birds, one stone.
That's right. Yeah. With the Hustler in 3D, as I recall. So
was that a fad? I've never heard that before. Was that like a thing? When was that, like, 70s?
70s? 3D... There's certain parts, you know, there's certain like...
I mean, I specifically mean porno mags. I'd never heard of a 3D porno mag.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Oh. Like, I don't know. I was always... it was never like I would ever get confused and think the woman was in the room. You know what I'm saying?
It wasn't that convincing.
Yeah.
Oh, hello.
Yeah. How do you do? Yeah, we didn't... I didn't worry much about that. Oh, I think... Cranston is on the phone, by the way. Let's see if I can get him up here. Ooh, line one. Brian?
That canned applause.
Yeah.
All the canned applause.
Get used to it, baby.
That even sounds canned.
It's all canned for you, baby.
It's all canned. How are you, buddy? What's happening?
Oh, I'm doing great. Where are you? You out of town?
I am just about to leave town. I'm going to head to Boston to do a play. For a couple months, so I'm looking forward to doing that.
But and is that just to sort of stretch your muscles as an actor? I mean, it's not a money gig per se, right? It's just a prestige thing.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's like you know what it's like. I mean, you do a podcast or two or three, and then once you take it on the road, when you did your show on the road, it's different.
Right.
You feel the audience, you know.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. That's the same thing for real actors. You know, we get up there and feel the audience.
No takeies. By the way, Breaking Bad final episodes coming up this Sunday on AMC 8 p.m. It's got to be incredible how people have responded to this project, is it not?
It's gone off the tracks. It's been great in a way because people are you know, it resonates within them that you know this plight of Walter White, and whether you hate him or love him or whatever. But they're following it, and that's really, really cool. And now this Sunday we start the final eight consecutive Sundays, and then we're done, man.
It seems like only yesterday I was driving you to the Burbank airport.
You were
getting ready in a horrible windstorm to take off for New Mexico. I didn't want to say anything, but I was like, Jesus Christ, I wouldn't get on a plane.
Yeah, that's a dumbass move there.
And,
you know, people have asked me, said, okay, so he says he did that, but he didn't really do that. I said, no. I said, I need a ride. I need a lift to the airport. And he goes, oh, I'm going that way. And I say, so it's, you know, we actually do real people things from time to time.
Well, that's what I love about the great Bryan Cranston. I love the fact that when we're doing our fund anything, and I've said it before, I reached out to you and you said, well, I'm in New Mexico and then I'm going to Toronto and I'm really swamped. And I said, are you going to be back for 10 minutes where we can run over to your house and just knock this thing out? And you said, fine. And most people wouldn't do that. They just wouldn't, especially people in your position.
I don't know. I mean, I got to say, in 34 years that I've worked in this business, there's probably three people, you know, well, you would make four, that I wouldn't want to work with ever again. But That's great odds when you think about it, working 34 years.
Okay, in alphabetical order, starring, well, let's see, where would Piven land on that?
No. I just wanted to call because I heard that you crossed over the threshold for Road Hard. You made it.
$1 million we crossed over, thanks to you, my friend. I really couldn't have done it without you. We just couldn't have.
I'm telling you, that's it says a lot. It says a lot about your fans, and I think it's amazing.
Yeah, they're enthusiastic, man. What can you say? But it's all you, and it's all great, Bryan Cranston.
Now, listen, it's not all me, because I actually read the script.
Really?
And, yeah, I did. And I must say, I was pleasantly surprised.
Wow, I'm so touched. I'm honored.
So the hammer, I thought, okay, he hit a home run first time at bat. He cannot do that again. And I gotta tell you, man, this script is pretty damn good. And you know, I'm not, you know, trying to blow smoke up your ass, but I just wanted to call to tell you to say I'm yours, man. If you have me, I'd love to do the movie, Road Hard.
You'd love to be in the movie?
I'm gonna do it.
This is so awesome because, you know, the whole time we're running this campaign and people are like, it's a joke, he's not going to be in the movie, and I know how busy you are, and I am so touched, and can I say, and I know I said it before, in a town full of asswipes, there is Bryan Cranston. I love that about you.
The best thing I could say to you about this, Adam, is that if this script wasn't strong, if this story of Road Hard wasn't strong and all there on the page, I wouldn't be making this phone call. It's that good.
I love that. I love that. I said it's an honor, and you're so decent. And I guess I don't want to talk too much turkey because I know we got a lot to work out, but I know you're busy. How many days do you think we could get you for?
We got a lot to work out. I mean, you know, when you talk about taking on a character that you know leads the rest of the acting troupe, and not only is that responsibility, but you carry the weight of the entire movie on your shoulders. You know, so
but,
I don't know. I mean,
wait, not the whole movie.
The shoot, I'll be there. The character of Bruce is like every day, isn't he? Yeah. He's in most of all.
Yeah, that's the lead.
So.
Now that's my character. Bruce is the lead.
Well, yeah, I know. I know.
Right.
I know you wrote it for yourself, but
right.
I don't think it's that big a deal to make a few changes here and there, tweak a little bit, punch it up, and you know, make it fit my personality. I think it'll.
Not the lead. The lead is Bruce. That I wrote for myself, Brian. That's the lead.
I know. What I'm saying is that it's not going to take that much work just to kind of twist it so that it fits more of who I am. Because
right. No. I'm excited that you want to be part of the movie, and I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to help us.
As Bruce, I'm going to kick its ass. You know that.
I know you're great, so I want you to be in the film, but I wrote it, and I'm going to direct it, and I'm going to star in it. That's kind of the plan.
Wait, hang on. I think we have a misunderstanding. When you asked me to be in the movie,
right.
Yeah, cool.
Right.
I said, I can't do it. Then I read the script, and I thought, damn, this is really good. It has a tremendous potential.
Right.
So I'm in.
Right.
And now, listen, I know you intended to be in it and to direct it, and you wrote it.
Right.
I'm not saying that there isn't a place for you. I mean, absolutely. There's a consultant job. There's all kinds of – we need you on the set to be able to tell us what was the genesis of each idea and each scene so that we can take it from there, right?
I want to be on the set so I can be in the movie, Brian, and the lead.
No, of course. No, I didn't mean that. Okay, there's the disconnect. I'm not saying there's not a place for you in the movie. Obviously, there's several parts in the script that you could fit. Several of them.
Okay.
You pick one. I think it'll be fine.
We can work this out. I am directing the film, however.
Wait, hey, I got great news. Talking about directing, now, I can't guarantee you this. Don't hold me to this, but I'm telling you, with my weight behind it and talking, I think we can get Ben Affleck to direct this.
That
is amazing.
It's fun for you, but I was going to direct. Going to direct this film.
Okay, but you know, in your heart of hearts. If you had a choice of you directing or Ben Affleck directing, remember, you ever hear of a little movie called Argo?
Yes, I went through that. Yes,
yeah.
I remember that.
Won the best picture.
Yeah, right. Right.
Of all the pictures.
Right. I remember that from.
It was the best one.
Right. I remember that from before. We talked about that. I'm just saying that I was kind of slated first. I was going to star in it, and now maybe not, and now I'm not going to be able to direct it. I intended on directing it, Brian.
The most important thing, remember this point, is that it's going to get done. The project is going to get done. People are going to see Road Hard as it blossoms and becomes what it should. You don't want to stand in its way, right? And you want to go with the best talent available. Am I right?
Yeah.
There we go. So then, you were talking about directing when you would have been directing you. But now that's not the case, right?
Right.
So.
I could direct you.
Yes. Yes, that's a possibility. We could work on some scenes before Ben or there's so many other possibilities to come in here. I mean, with my face on the poster and Ben Affleck directing, you have a shot as one of the writers, because we'll get some other writers on it to punch it up and stuff.
Okay.
But we can get some of the other. We have a shot. We have a shot of a theatrical release.
Listen,
Sundance.
Brian, I don't talk about myself this way, but I'm a pretty good actor. I got to be honest with you.
Yeah. I kind of thought that we saw everything you could do in the Hammer.
Yes.
I don't.
There's more in the tank. Yeah.
Ace, you got twins, right?
Yes, I have twins.
I've got triplets. They're named Emmy.
Hold on, did you just do the sniff move?
No, what do you mean?
You did the sniff after you said Emmy.
Yeah.
That's my move.
I've been doing that for years.
No.
Years.
Listen, Brian, this has gone insane now. I do the sniff. I direct myself. All right.
Jesus, look, you're upset. okay? You know, but just trace back, okay? Just look at what has transpired up to this point, okay? And then you tell me if you have the right to be upset. First, you come over to my house.
Mm-hmm.
I have 10 minutes. You beg me to be in your movie. We did the little video to try to help raise the money. What did we do by me being in the video? You raised the money.
Right.
Now you wanted me to be in your movie, and I said, I can't be in your movie. Then I read your script, and I said, okay, I'll agree to be in your movie, but now you don't want me to be in your movie?
No, I want...
It's like, instead of being grateful, you're acting like a little whiny bitch.
Okay. First off, I'm so sorry that it's devolved into this. I'm grateful, Brian. I'm truly grateful, and I think it's amazing what you've done. But I didn't offer you the lead role in the film. I wrote the film for myself.
You know, there's a lot of desires that we have coming to town here, being in this business.
Okay.
But you can't always get what you want.
I understand, but I wrote this film for myself, Brian.
Oh, my God. You know what? I thought I was helping you out. I thought I was going to say, look, hey, you know what? You want to sell this movie? Put me in the lead, and I thought that's what you were asking me to do before. Now, to help you get out of your little podfuck studio there with your little, you know what? I hope that fucking place burns to the ground with all your little cars and your stupid shit Gria. Just feeds the flames.
All right, Brian,
burn to the ground.
Man, fuck off.
That right. With you. Fuck,
fuck
off.
You. Fuck you. Fuck you.
Off. You
fuck off.
You fuck off
you
and die.
You fuck your.
Fuck you.
Fuck you. Fuck. You fucking hang up.
Bryan Cranston, everyone.
That son of a bitch.
that got ugly.
Jeez, it started off so promising, too, didn't it?
I was like
so
an ass
excited
fest for
at
you,
first.
Yeah.
It was like, oh my God, he's going to be in this movie.
I mean, maybe Hollywood has changed him.
We should take a break. I feel like I have to get my stuff together. I'm sweaty now. My adrenaline's pumping. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Jackson, Mississippi. A 26-year-old man was seriously injured after he was attacked by yellow jackets and then jumped off and was run over by his own riding lawnmower. Definitely not a Jew.
Monica Mehta here. We had her in some months ago. I think we said she was from CNBC then, and we said it now, and that's what you got to love about Mike August. not from CNBC. The entrepreneurial spirit, but instinct.
That'll help with sales. Instinct.
Instinct. Available on Amazon, everybody. And you know what to do. Go to AdamCarolla.com, click the Amazon banner. How's it going? Good to see you again.
Excellent. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah. Let's start macro and then go micro. I never know really whenever they go, well, the Fed just keeps printing money. Well, blah, 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 the deficit. I don't think the deficit means anything to anybody. What would get this country in shape the fastest, in your humble opinion, financially?
Jobs.
Jobs.
With a capital J, jobs. Mm-hmm. Because when people have jobs, they spend money. When people have jobs, they feel certain about their situation. They're going to make more long-term investment decisions. Without jobs, there's a level of uncertainty that puts a cloud over everything.
Mm.
And that's why our current situation, even with the stock market being as high as it is, isn't so great, because we really still don't have jobs, good jobs. The unemployment number keeps coming down. We're at 7.4%.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really dig into those numbers, the kinds of jobs we're making are part-time jobs. They're not very good paying jobs. And if you look at the labor force participation, which which is another statistic that a lot of economists look at. And that really takes into account the number of people moving into the country. You'll see there's actually a lot of shenanigans with the jobs number. The labor force participation is still down significantly from, say, 2000, where at like 63%, whereas it was 67% back then. And it's barely budged in the last 5 years. And it just tells you that while the unemployment number keeps coming down, it's not coming down in a meaningful way.
Well, how do we – did you hear Cranston tell me to fuck off?
I did.
Can you believe that guy? Fucking nervous.
That won't create jobs.
I thought we had a relationship.
That's one less job.
How do we create, like, you know, whatever happened to Detroit? Detroit used to be such a huge just engine of manufacturing, literally, you know, Motor City, and now it's this. How do you get that back? What do you do? How do you create jobs? Because then that's where the argument starts, the creating of the jobs part, right?
So when you want to talk about job creation, a very meaningful part of the conversation is small business. And back in 1980, small business used to comprise 4 out of every 5 jobs in America. Mm-hmm. And now it's 2 out of every 3. We're at a 30-year low in terms of startup activity in this country. And what I think is interesting and is not really talked about a lot is our savings rate is also at a 30-year low. So back in the 1980s, the average person would save 8 to 10% of what they made. In the 90s, it fell down to about 6%. In the 2000s, it was down at 3 or 4% at the beginning of the decade and went down to negative, meaning people were spending more than they were making each year. Negative savings.
Somebody tweeted me a picture. I think I saved it, Gary. But it was something to the effect of be a hero, save money or something.
It takes courage.
But saving money is worth it. We're now doing this thing where it's like, be a hero, be a dad, you know, raise your children, be a hero, have courage. It takes courage, but saving money is worth it. Like, first thing we're doing is I feel like we're taking a lot of the no shit and the no duh stuff and turning it into the action movie stuff. Like, it's just raising your family. It's just saving money. It's just the things that humans do in order to be prosperous for the next generation and have something put aside. We're now taking this and turning it into these impossible feats. And I know
the willpower possibly, but how is it courage?
I don't know. But this fact that everyone has to be a hero for just getting out of bed and fucking getting dressed and making themselves breakfast, it's fucking nuts.
You don't spend more than you make. Be a hero.
Right. Yeah. Stop eating so much and start getting some exercise. Be a hero. Like, it's just this kind of no shit stuff that we didn't even discuss it in years past because it was just assumed, you know, like, all right, you pay for your own meal and you save your money and you get yourself dressed in the morning. So how do we get these small businesses back?
I'm actually surprised that 2/3 of the jobs are small business. That seems higher than I would have thought.
Well, so things are better than you think, Alan.
You don't see everything feels like one big
Walmart
commercial,
exactly.
But when you drive up and down the streets, every place you pass is probably a small business.
The reason why saving money really does make you a hero today is because nobody's saving money. We went down to a negative savings rate, and I think there is a very important correlation between the amount of money people save and the financial literacy and just the financial well-being of American families and the ability to go out there and start a business. Because when you think about, well, how do you even get the money to start a business? Most people think, oh, it's angel investors and venture capital. 6% of the total financing available for small business comes from those sources. Bank loans are maybe 11%. The vast majority of money that people use to start a business comes from your savings. When people aren't saving, they can't take the risk. You know, when you're worried about your student loans and your mortgage and your car loan and you don't have anything left at the end of every month, how in the heck are you going to take a risk? And when people don't take risks, we don't start businesses. And that's what's happening in this country.
Well, it's funny because there used to be a mentality which is, well, I mean, you know, 200 years ago, like the winter is coming. We need to get a bunch of dried buffalo meat, you know, and put it in salt and put it away and start getting cords of wood stacked up. Because once the winter comes, we'll starve if we run out of this, you know, pemmican over here.
Is that your foreboding winter voice?
Yes, that's my winter voice. More buffalo meat and rock salt. The storm this way cometh. No, we had to do these kinds of things or we would die. Like, we would not make it through the winter if we didn't have enough firewood and, you know, dried up meat and shit like that. Now there's a kind of a, winter's never coming. And there's an element, and I think we're all, not many people are guilty of this. I include myself in a kind of a, it'll work out. Like, we'll figure it out.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's the winter storm. Maybe the storm will come. The storm does come. The government will, they'll shovel me out.
Well, here's
they'll
the big umbrella that a lot of people are counting on. It's called debt. So back in 1980, the average family had a debt-to-income ratio of 57%.
And now explain that.
So basically the amount of debt that you have for the amount of money you make, mm-hmm. right? So back then it was 57%. You're solidly making a lot more money than the debt you have.
Right.
Now the debt-to-income, in 2007, it was 125%. Mm-hmm. So the average person more than doubled the amount of debt that they carry. Mm-hmm. Right. And more so than what they actually even have in terms of assets. And it's come down a little bit in the last 5 years. Like, people are trying to get their financial house in order. Now it's 107%. But it's still so far off where it was 30 years ago. So if you think about those two just data points, you know, the savings rate, we're not saving much anymore. We're not saving hardly anything anymore. And now we have so much debt. The combination of the two is making the country strapped. And it tells me one thing. We are lacking financial literacy in this country.
God damn. For fuck's sake, we do more, really more education on second and third hand smoke than we do on financial literacy. Let's be honest. Everyone in this room, in the last 20 years of your life, in terms of government related, hey, man, you know, PSAs and this is what you do and stuff. I've seen, I don't know what I've seen in that would fall under the umbrella of finances. I've seen thousands of hours of, you know, white guy in his living room smoking, smoke travels up through ventilation system, gets to baby and crib up top. Like, we're obsessed with, like, water safety, secondhand smoke, like, click it or ticket. How about save it?
I was going to say, forget about PSAs, because at that point, the horse is out of the barn a little bit. Like, we've talked a lot about, why aren't there basic financial literacy classes in high school? Like, before kids start earning money, why can't they learn how to
manage it? Why isn't it okay to talk about money?
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Just most people don't even talk about money, and it's become a taboo subject. And I think we've become such a PC culture that we just stay away from all of these things. Like,
but
money's not what polite people talk about.
What we do in our educational system, and I did it with my kids early. I mean, they're still young, but I mean, they were like five. And I was like, you know, what do you want to do, Natalia? And she's like, I want to be a school teacher. And I'm like, good. That's good. But you do understand you don't get to drive mommy's Audi and you don't get to live in this house. And she's like, what's up? And I said, well, being a school teacher's noble. It's a good job. But you don't get to live in this house. You don't get to drive an A7 Audi.
She's a professor.
Maybe. Mm. And I said, and she stopped and she went, you don't? And I said, no, you make enough money to have a condominium in Sherman Oaks and drive a Jetta.
But, awfully specific.
Yeah. Black with a beige interior, live with a guy named Stuart, who prefers an unconventional type of sex that we can get into later. But that's what that's the life you'll. I'm not saying it's a bad life. Just Stuart's a hell of a cat. But what I'm saying is you will not be driving mommy's car. And she went, hold on now. I don't know if I want that. Now, I think I like mommy's car. And I said, yeah. Well, again, that'll be your decision. But we used to do this thing all the time. You want to be a cop, you want to be a fireman, you want to be a lawyer, you want to be a dentist. Someone has to explain there's different cars, different houses, and different lifestyles attached to cop, fireman versus attorney, doctor, dentist. And that's the first thing we don't do. It's just, what's everyone want to do? I want to be a cowboy. Okay, you could work on a ranch. You know, that probably means not a lot of great Maui vacations.
Yeah, we're really two-faced, or there's really a double message about the importance of money. because on one hand, it's obviously very important to have money. On the other hand, there's such a – but see, I agree with the thrust of this, the idea that, well, you can't really measure the quality of a person by how much money they have.
No, but you can let them know that this profession will lead you – here's what you can basically – here's what you should be driving and where you should be living – and here, you know, somewhat, to some degree, this will be your lifestyle with this profession, which is fine, and you're doing better than 99% of the people on the planet, but that's what it is. See, when you're a kid, and even all the way, for me, I don't know, even through high school, they didn't really make any distinction between cop, fireman, and attorney.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just, that's just a job. It's just another job. So if you want a job, you can get a job.
It was all the same to you. Jobs you won't get.
Jobs, yeah, I'm not going to be a cop. Or I couldn't. Cop and fireman was too lofty for me. But not only is there no sort of financial correlation to whatever job you have and how much money that will pay, there's nothing about saving and forget about the stock market and compounding interest, and it was just one big fat zero.
Explain what APR is, like simple basic stuff. Like your
huge zero, well, and I took ceramics classes.
I have a very scientific metric, which is my Louis Vuitton index. When back in 1980, I feel like as a kid, if a woman had a Louis Vuitton bag, she was just the shit. Like, she stood out. She was special. Now I feel like everybody and their sister has four, and I think that tells you a little bit about just how people live today, the level to which, you know, the consumerism has also taken over. Because, again, coming back to this, we can talk about, you know, if you're a teacher, you make $50,000 a year and you have to live within $50,000. The thing is, there's lots of tools that allow you to live like you make $100,000 a year.
Yes.
And so there's no balance. And it's not just, you know, it's not just having an idea of the type of career path you'll have, but it's learning how to manage the debt.
Are you talking about credit cards as these tools?
Credit cards, student loans, mortgages. I mean, I think where you've seen the greatest inflation over the last 30 years is really with student loans. We pay a lot more for education now than we used to 30 years ago. Houses, the average person used to spend 25% of what they made on their house. Now it's 40%. And the thing is, it just doesn't register to people that even if you can get the mortgage, maybe you shouldn't be spending that much.
Well,
financial literacy again.
I remember when it was a big deal, like, he drives a Mercedes Benz. He's a rich guy. Remember, he used to be able to judge people, just, he drives a BMW. Of course I'm going to date him. Like, now, to feel like everyone has a Mercedes or a BMW or a smaller form of it or something.
Were cars not leased back then?
I don't think there was the leasing thing. And I also, they did not, to be fair, they didn't do the poor man's version of the Mercedes-Benz. They didn't do the one that was sort
entry
of
level.
Yeah, for $1,500 more than a loaded Camry, you could get this one. But still, there's a lot of people that are making $800 a week and driving around $40,000 cars, and it's just, they just shouldn't be. Before we get into the news, Monica, give us just three quickie, easy to digest things people should do, could do to help their financial situation.
Save, for starters, because when you save, you can fund all the risk-taking that you need to give yourself a raise and become your own pirate. So,
yeah, baby.
Wow.
Welcome aboard.
Save and have your kids watch you save, because all of these financial literacy skills start really young, like at 4 and 5. Have them watch you pay the bills. Have them watch you balance your checkbook. Even if you don't balance your checkbook, start doing it so you can teach somebody else. Because again, this problem's compounding. When parents don't know how to manage money, kids don't know how to manage money.
Oh, I didn't, you know, my parents didn't have credit cards.
Well, didn't have money to manage.
I didn't have money to manage, but it's like it was never a discussion. I never saw anything. There was It's like it didn't exist, and it's the weirdest thing because there is one thing we all universally need, and we act like I'll forget about secondhand smoke, music. There's more discussion about school and music programs and Save the Music and Hi, I'm Bono, and they're taking the school, the, and kids learn, when they learn the cello, then they learn the reading and math. It's always this fucking bullshit thing that I never quite buy, which is, of course, if you have a whole bunch of time to focus on something, you do get better at all things in life. But anyway, lots of Save the Music, lots of VH1 Cares, lots of fucking benefit concerts. Never a fucking discussion about money. Never. And I like music, but it doesn't – I don't play anything, and I don't play professionally, and I don't know anyone who makes a living playing a fucking instrument. We all use money. We all need money to survive. We all don't need – these guys, you know, pluck away on the guitar when they're high, which is all the time, and they have fun, but it's not paying the bills for any of them, and – I don't know when this became, when did music, like in schools, just as it pertained to schools, when did the whole music program become, you know why? Because we're so in love with ourselves. And we're sitting like a music and it turned, you know that kids that study the oboe learn at a 63% higher, just shut the fuck up. Fuck music, save the shop class, and focus on some money and some financial education. Just, it never comes up. And it's the one universal that we all need. The shop. Maybe you don't need the shop class. The music, you probably aren't going to need the music. But the money you will need. All right, shall we do a little news, baby girl?
Mm-hmm.
The news with Allison Rosen.
She'll read some news from her iPad. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. It's Allison, Allison. And when it's time to wrap it up, she'll sign it off with Zip It Cunt. It's Allison, Allison.
So a weird thing happened on a lot of people's cell phones last night, which is they made a crazy noise and then an Amber Alert popped up. Did anyone in this room get that Amber Alert?
Mm. My phone does not work in my house.
I saw it blowing up on the Twitter and
yeah.
Facebook.
Also, this Amber Alert's the worst name for an alert because, all right, the chick's name was Amber, but Amber's a color.
Right, it sounds like a terror chart color or something to me.
That terror chart color thing will be my first, the beginning, the middle, and the end of every argument I have about how dumb our government is. The idea that we needed to come out with a safety system so that we could let the public know just what the threat level was, and we picked random colors that have no order. There's no inherent order to colors. Like, if I just lay out orange and red and yellow and magenta on a table, you can't put them in a right order unless you're going after, like, the Hungarian flag or something. There is no fucking order. So for 10 years, it was like, we're yellow. And then everyone would go, what does that mean? And then they'd go, that's guarded. You know, or whatever alert. And then you also realize, well, then what do we need the fucking color for if the explanation after the color shows up?
Yeah.
We are colossally stupid as a government and human beings.
Yeah, because red means you should stop on a stoplight. But
right.
when we're red, we're freaking out, right?
Right. All right. So it popped up on everyone's phone.
Yeah, it didn't pop up on mine either, which I don't understand how it was determined which phones it pops up on. I think newer phones definitely got it. Daniel's phone, that's my fiance, he got it. So I heard it. And then on Twitter, people were saying, like, I thought we were going to war. I mean, it was a very loud sound, and most people didn't realize their phone did this. Anyway, though, it is an Amber Alert because in San Diego, two children who are 16 and 8 are missing, and their mother's body was found burned in a house along with the remains of a dog and the remains of an unidentified child. And a friend of hers is the suspect. They were driving in a blue Nissan.
I saw the it's a Versa, I think, for some reason, because I did see that on the freeway sign. The first piece of information other than click it or ticket I've seen in the last 11 years of driving these fucking godforsaken town. But it is a Versa. Yeah, I remember seeing that on the freeway today. And that's a good use of one of those signs, which is, hey, millions of motorists, if you see this, go ahead and ram them off the road. I mean, that's what I read into it.
Yeah. That was implied.
Now, my phone doesn't work in my house, so I just leave it in my car. Wow. All right.
I just assumed it was their dad who had taken them. Like, the truth about the milk carton kids, but this is actually, it seems to be a kidnapping.
This is the problem when you live in Southern California. Every time there's a child has been abducted, it's right, great, dad's bringing them back to Mexico. Like, that's your thought. That's your first sad thought, but
yeah.
That's what lion's share of these turn out to be parent grabbed going back to country of origin or something.
Bringing them back to Mexico where they had a wonderful family vacation?
That's right.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought you meant.
Or it could be Saudi Arabia. I saw that Sally Fields movie.
Mm-hmm. So story out of all places, Florida. A school bus driver, 64-year-old John Moody, called 911 because there were three boys on the bus who were 15 beating up a 13-year-old. And here's his 911 call.
It's like guys standing over someone who's on the ground.
School bus.
And they're just,
and then you can see them just pummeling him. He had a broken arm, two black eyes, really messed up.
Shouldn't the bus driver, first off, can we give these guys some fucking pepper spray? Like,
well,
number one. And number two, don't we want these bus drivers like to stand up and be able to do something about this shit? Like when someone's being pummeled, like physically pummeled, if you were leaned up against the ropes and Mike Tyson was punching you, you wouldn't want someone to go, I'll call 911. We should have a cruiser here in about 12, 14 minutes.
Hang tight.
You hang tight. You'd be dead.
That's exactly the debate, because the bus driver is catching a lot of heat from not from law enforcement or anything like that or from the school, but just from people in the community who feel like, why did he not do anything? But then the argument for why he didn't is, well, he's 64. He was not legally obligated to do anything. And not in this district, it's up to his discretion. But in a lot of school districts, there's a rule that bus drivers are not allowed to get involved. I mean, so it's 15-year-olds and then it's a 64-year-old guy.
You don't have like Opie on the bus anymore. Like these kids are big and they appear pretty violent. So I think the bus driver would even be bringing his safety into serious question.
Right.
Yeah. And look, it's a sad state of affairs that, first off, we need cameras in school buses. That would have been an interesting explanation from someone in the 50s. Like, why do you need cameras in school buses? Well, because people are raping each other on the way to school and beating the shit out of students on the way to school. Like, that would be confusing. So we have no standards. It's not really about standards anymore. It's just about capturing shit on film, like when everyone ignores whatever laws we've tried to put into place. So first off, those kids, and more importantly, I want their parents spoken to. I want their parents brought into this mix. When you start doing things that are overtly violent and you're 15 years old, well under 18, I want the fucking parents and the family. I want to know what's going on.
Well, good luck reaching them. They're probably reading The Entrepreneurial Instinct.
I'm saying.
We have a good message in the book.
Yeah.
So the reason they were beating them up, they tried to sell drugs to him, and he went to the, he tattled on them. He told the school officials that they had tried to sell drugs. But there's this question of why were they, the school knew about the situation, so why were they still on the bus? Why are they still in school, et cetera?
You know, as I've said, and look, I know everyone would freak out if you said, arm the school bus drivers, but we will get to that point. We will get to that point. Sadly, these guys are going to have to be armed one day. Right now, they're just going to be armed with pepper spray or something. I don't want a guy sitting there helpless while somebody's being beat possibly to death. I want them to have a pepper spray, and I want them to be trained. And then there's this thing where it's like, well, if he's got the pepper spray, then what if one of the kids gets hold of the pepper spray? It's like, we're going to have to treat it like other – unfortunately, everybody – who works at a school level, janitors, teachers, bus drivers, are going to have to be part, whatever your main job is, part cop. That's the sad part. I mean, as long as we're going to raise a bunch of fucking violent criminals, then school bus drivers are going to be school bus drivers and mall cops. And teachers are going to be teachers and mall cops. And janitors are going to be janitors and cops. Because there's never enough time for the cops to show up. Whatever transpired has transpired at that point, and everyone's going to have to get training and have to get pepper spray and learn how to mace or what have you and learn how to do this. And that's the new reality that we forge for ourselves.
The bus driver did seem pretty upset by it, and here's just a video of him talking a little bit about that.
I wanted to help him so bad. I wanted to help him so bad. I wanted to help him.
Yeah, they feel bad. But Geez, I'm trying to think who the hell that guy looked like. He looked like somebody. Anyway, look, what are we going to do when a 15-year-old guy will turn and punch an elderly man?
Yeah.
I mean, is the elderly guy supposed to fucking stick his brittle jaw out in front of the 60-something-year-old guy in front of the 15-year-old who's built, has a build on him like he's, you know, second-year junior college linebacker? And, again, I don't know. Is every liquor store going to have plexiglass in front of it? Is everyone going to have pepper spray? Is there going to have to be a fucking camera everywhere? Or are we going to start fucking focusing on families, education, and bringing some civility back into this horrible society we're creating? Is there enough bulletproof plexiglass? Is there enough pepper spray? Is there enough training? Is there enough? And I'm talking about families teaching their kids the difference between right and wrong, whatever level it's on, whether it's school shootings or bus beatings, just fucking families responsibly instilling the right values into their goddamn kids instead of ignoring them and then unleashing them on the kids that do try to do the right thing. Hey, someone's selling drugs. Well, that's wrong. I'm going to go report it. And then I'm going to get my jaw broken.
Did you guys take the bus to school?
I did, but it was the public bus. It wasn't a school bus.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I walked.
Several years, actually.
I walked to, I lived across the street from my elementary school, and then I walked everywhere.
I took the bus, but I feel like people didn't even think about these things back then. Like, it was inconceivable. And I think to your point, Adam, if you look at low-income neighborhoods where they've got public schools and the graduation rates are 8%, in the exact same neighborhood you have a charter school where parents have to sign contracts with the school and the graduation rate is 84%. And the big difference is the parents are involved. You can't get into these schools unless the parents sign a contract that they are responsible for their kids.
Well, not only that, but instead of, you know, in the city of Oakland or parts of Chicago, when the city and the government are going to do it for $15,000 a kid, the fucking charter school do it for $10,000 a kid. But guess what? When someone wants to open a charter school that has an amazing graduation rate and placement in college and fucking parents, these poor parents literally holding their kids up trying to throw them into the school when they have these lotteries, guess who wants them shut down? Guess who gets involved? The fucking teachers' unions and the guys running the school board. They don't want the competition. Of course you don't want competition. I wouldn't want competition either if I was fucking horrible at my job. If I was horrific at my job. If your job, by the way, the job you're doing with these kids is literally killing kids. It's literally killing kids. They're going right into gangs. They're dropping out. They're getting into violence. And they're getting shot. That's the job that you guys are doing. Let the person with the entrepreneurial instinct come in here and say, I can do a better job at running this school. But you think the city would be applauding these people as heroes? Look at this graduation level. Look at these graduation rates. Look at the college placement. No, they want them shut down. And then they fucking nickel and dime them with permits and zoning shit and all that kind of stuff. And guess who loses? We do. The people that are paying a fucking premium in taxes and getting criminals, and the poor people that live in the fucking city where these criminals are being essentially hatched. It's a fucking hatchery for criminals. Jesus Christ. When are we going to get smart? When is everyone going to wake up? Realize government does not do a very good job at this kind of stuff. There's always somebody. And I'll tell you why. You have to have shit at stake. You have to have a guy who goes, if this school goes under, I'm out of a gig. I lose money. And by the way, all the teachers at those schools can be fired at any time for doing a less subpar than adequate job, a subpar job. You will be fired.
Why aren't we seeing more outrage from these low-income neighborhoods and these communities regarding their schools?
They have their elected officials. They have their leaders. They'll speak for them, except for they never say anything about this. See, they have community leaders who don't want to talk shit. That's the way this works. Of course, everyone should be outraged
by
this.
This rhetoric is boiling up. Like post Trayvon Martin, you hear a lot of black community leaders saying the schools are terrible. The school to prison pipeline.
Oh yeah,
I just heard about that for the first time the other day.
Huffington Post will tell you all about the pipeline.
Couldn't you disrupt the pipeline by being able to fire crappy teachers? And why aren't these people rising up?
You oversimplify it. There's so many more nuances. I don't have any answers. I'm playing the part of the Huffington Post reporter. First off, you're racist. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, I found that out about a year back.
Yes, you're racist. Oh, so you do know you're racist.
Yeah, I went on to MSNBC and said entrepreneurs take risks and got hate mail, death threats, and became a racist.
There's two types of racists.
I hope you learned your lesson.
There's the racists that know they're racist and then the racists that don't know they're racist. So you be the one that knows you're racist. So you're racist, number one. Number two, I don't have any answers to any of your questions. All I'm going to do is deflect and call you a racist. Tell you it's complicated.
I'm brown, for starters, so I'm not sure you can call me a racist.
That's racist.
No, I know what's in your heart. Don't tell me I don't know what's in your
heart.
That's
so not racist.
You have hatred in your heart. You have hatred in your heart. Believe me. By the way, my question for all the people to HuffPo, stay the course? Because that seems to be the plan. Just everything's working its way on out. It's working like a fucking charm. I've come up with, I'll tell you 10 different ways we can cure this problem. Gavin Newsom and Huffington Post, they'll tell you, you don't know what you're talking about. All right, good. I welcome your new plan being ushered in to solve this problem. Gavin Newsom doesn't like the predatory nature of the check cashing places. Fine, Gavin. What's your fucking answer? Oh, what? You don't have shit, do you? Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, it'd be nice if charter schools could just open up in these horrible, horrible cities and these brave people that run these things could go in there and educate these kids. And by the way, these kids, once the parents get involved and the kids get involved, and there's a little – the way the charter schools work, the city schools work this way, which is if you start disciplining kids and a certain group gets disciplined more than another group gets disciplined, then that's racist. Then that has to stop. And then there's no more disciplining going on, which is not going to serve anyone with a discipline problem. Whether it's eating or having a lack of discipline, saying don't worry about it at age 14 is not going to be a bright future. These charter schools, the guy will walk up and down the hall and he'll see some kid who's late and he'll go, give me 20 push-ups. That kid drops down, does 20 push-ups. Teacher's not cutting it, fired. Parents not involved, you'll get kicked out too. And you know what happens? Magically, everyone steps up. The kids from the horrible inner city Oakland schools and Chicago schools who are way behind in math and reading and everything else, all of a sudden start to rise up. Why? Because they're standards and people are asking something of them. And they are creating consequences. Show up late, do push-ups. Mama, you want your kid in this good school? You do homework with your baby. All of a sudden, a few years goes by, graduation rates through the fucking roof, and they do it all at probably 65 cents on the dollar that the county does or that the city does. But are we interested in this? No. Why isn't there more outrage? Because every time someone pipes up, they get called a racist. All right. Let's see how it works. Let's see if the big picture holds for the HuffPo folks with the pipeline from the school to the prisons and the Gavin Newsoms. Let's send the check cashing places. Let's see how it all works out. Fucking hypocrites.
Question for Monica. Why was it racist that you said that entrepreneurs take risks?
I don't know. Someone needs to explain that to me.
It's in your heart.
Yeah, no, there was a conversation about economic mobility in America. And, my whole thing is being an entrepreneur. That's how my family personally found mobility in this country.
What's the nationality of your family?
We're Indian.
Oh, so you are racist. No, because there's...
Just a little bit.
Yo, whoa, watch it there. What's in that brown heart of yours?
Yeah, so it was a conversation about how people lift themselves up, and it was right after the you didn't build that speech, and I said that the big thing missing was that, he didn't talk about the risks that entrepreneur's take, and the host on the show said that there's nothing riskier than being poor. Basically had verbal diarrhea all over.
Wait, doesn't that solve the problem right there? He just gave you your answer. There's nothing riskier than being poor.
No, I mean, she's talking potato sack race, and I'm talking a different – I mean, we're talking apples and
idiots.
Oranges.
They never give any answers. They just go, you know what it's like to be poor? Like, and you go, well, my parents were poor, but now we're not poor because we did a bunch of this stuff. And then they go, yeah, you don't understand that.
No, but the thing is, you're not allowed to have a different kind of backstory. Like, if you live a certain way now, it was always that way. It was just handed to you. There's no other possibility.
Everybody, just about everybody in this country came here poor and uneducated. That's how they arrived, and then they focused on education and saving money and sending their kid to college and doing better than the last gen, and that's the great American success story. I don't know why all the fucking talking heads at HuffPo have to interrupt that all the time. They act as if, well, my dad was Andrew Carnegie, and of course he started out with a steel foundry. It's like, no, he didn't. No one I know's dad was wildly successful or owned a chain of anything.
The Patels of the Quickie Mart.
Yeah. And by the way, if your dad was successful, then we'll go back one more to his dad who did have to work in a Kentucky coal mine.
Does your dad have a stereotypical job for whatever he did? Was it a Quickie Mart type situation?
No, it wasn't a Quickie Mart, but he was a ship's captain. And literally...
Like Life of Pi.
Just like that.
Just like that.
Right. And a baboon and a tiger?
Oh, we lived on a ship when I was little. And literally, he had to change his line of work 100% completely because we had to go to school. And so he started a business out of necessity.
Import.
Yeah, that's right.
I listen sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't easy. And I mean, watching them as a kid, I had no idea what they were doing. But you know what? It worked out. And I could only hope to have as much success as they did. And I think they had that hunger, which made them take risks. They were pack rats when it came to saving, and that enabled them to take risks. There were two of them, and they stayed together. My father and my mother,
allowed them
to take risks.
I
mean, that's security. I
won't listen to this kind of racist hate speak anymore.
It's easy. It is simple.
I will not host hate speak first with the saving of the money, then with the entrepreneurial spirit, now with the staying together, the mother and the father. I will not sit here and tolerate this kind of hate speak.
I appreciate you taking a stand like that.
It's crazy hate speak. Take that back. You have no idea how racist you are in your heart. You just don't know. I know you're told, but it's time you be told again.
It is brown like the color of my skin.
And parents focused on education?
They didn't focus so much on education, to be honest with you.
Who instilled that in you?
You know what? Just watching them work really hard. And like my childhood home was covered with boxes of inventory. They were gone all the time. I was a latchkey kid. And to me, it was beautiful. There was nothing more beautiful because I just saw them working so hard trying to achieve something. And I wanted to achieve something.
Yeah.
And I mean, I used to forge my own report cards because nobody was around. But that, I mean, to me, just watching them, there was an osmosis from their desire. And you want to set a good example for your kids, then do well. Save money, stay together, work hard. And that's the best example you can set.
You know what I just thought of? You don't need a key for a latch. You know the latch key,
yeah,
kids?
You latch and unlatch with your pants.
Yeah,
basically.
Like latch is something you do with like an overhead compartment.
He didn't hear anything you said, but he did realize this.
You don't need a key for a latch.
You're right.
It's a
lock.
You
should just be a key on a rope kid.
You should be a deadbolt kid or something. But it's not a latch is like something you'd have on a tackle box. And you wouldn't need a key to open it.
Mm. You know, like a thumb lock.
Key is a lock, and a latch is, you know, like a hatch, like a latch. Like you'd latch down, I don't know, the hood of a car.
Yeah, but done like the old, like pirate's trunk, like trunks. You have to like put the latch down and then lock it.
Oh. So if you're raised by pirates? But I feel like, so you're raised in a trunk? Is that what
it can't have meant that.
Could have meant that. All right, one more story, baby girl.
Well, I don't know if this will blow your mind the way it is blowing my mind, but it is the 50th anniversary. This month is the 50th anniversary of the cassette tape.
Mm.
I just, for some reason, feel like cassettes should have been around for longer.
Oh, no, it feels old. I mean, it feels about, I can't picture, you know, reel to reel. I remember, it doesn't feel longer to me. I mean, I could see The cassette one, the little 60 or 90 minute ones, right?
Yeah. Right. Because it just seems like for a form of music to have already become obsolete, it was such a big thing. It should have been around longer.
It was a big deal. I remember people had the reel to reel systems back in the day.
Yeah, and cassettes
were probably less than 50 years old.
Yeah, eight tracks, probably just a little bit. Or late 60s, early 70s. Mm. Yeah.
But do you get to continue to count anniversaries when the tool's been obsolete for decades already, right? Like, when did we get rid of tapes?
You're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the dud of a story.
get that drop.
I've had Time magazine. I've had a lot of experience, like, putting the pencil in and doing the rewind, like, when the car didn't do the thing.
Right.
And I've also always had trouble like hitting the song I was looking for. There was a lot of and then back and then
I have a lot of experience with tapes melting in cars.
I have a lot of experience with them flipping over themselves in the old stereos versus you physically flipping them over and getting confused. And then when you're fast forwarding, you're actually rewinding because you're on the wrong side.
Yes.
Oh, torture.
Or when you pull it out but the tape itself is stuck in there.
Yeah.
Good riddance, I say, except that I know recording engineers who love tape. Dawson, are you one of them?
Not really.
You don't enjoy the warm, buttery analog sounds?
You can recreate it very easily.
Okay.
I miss the make your own, speaking of working out, when I used to teach boxing, I had my boxing mix cassette, you know, and I'd put all my fun, fast, rocking, boxing songs on there. And, you know, literally sitting there waiting for the song to end and then hitting pause, you know, and then getting the next CD out or the next record out and then hitting the play, but trying to do it where you didn't, you know, you couldn't edit it. And then there's that thing where it's like, well, it's a 90-minute cassette, but you get 45 on each side. Do you have 3 minutes left for that Ramon song or is it going to cut?
And did you carry your tapes around in some cool carrier? Because you always had to have a way to get them from your house to your car.
I wasn't good enough. I wasn't cool enough for that.
Have our friendships deteriorated since the end of the tape? Like how many wonderful like mixtapes from your boyfriend and from your friends in the summer of na-na-na?
Road trip tapes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Now it's just it's too much, too fast, too all the time. And then I think there's an appreciation for it. Like you had to kind of earn it a little bit. Someone would get hold of an album and it was a big deal and then you'd borrow it from them and then you'd tape it. Like it was so slow and so simple, but yet so satisfying. All right.
That's the news. I'm Allison Rosen. Zip it, cunts.
I guess the nice guy with the accent wants a hustler.
That was the news with Allison Rosen.
Also, I'm going to miss that Memorex guy. I missed the Ella Fitzgerald commercial.
Was he the one who had his hair blown back by the tape or the whatever it was audio system? Or was that Pioneer?
Oh, that was Pioneer.
Ah, fuck.
Oh, no, that was Maxell. That was Maxell.
I don't remember.
I'd like to find out what that Maxell dude is doing. What he's up to.
It could have been Memorex.
I think it was.
Well. Is it live or is it Memorex?
That was Ella Fitzgerald, wasn't it? Yeah. All right, we'll figure this out. But I want to know what that super cool dude who was drunk, I'm assuming he was drunk, and he was sitting on a leather chair, and he was had his hair blown back. And I always thought, man, that guy's got it made. He's got a styling leather chair.
Yep.
Great tunes. Obviously a great speaker system because his hair's moving.
Obviously lives alone.
And he's wearing shades. Yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty cool. Oh, it was Maxell.
Maxell. What did I say it was?
Memorex.
Oh, no, no. I had Maxell.
You said Maxell.
Oh,
I said Memorex.
Thank everyone for trying to fuck me. that dude. I'd like to see the fat 56-year-old version of that guy with the male pattern baldness driving the beige Camry. Would you like to see that guy now?
Not so sexy anymore.
How many times do you think he works that into a conversation when he's trying to get laid?
Oh, all the time.
Do you think there's a scenario where he says someone like, I was the Maxell guy? And they're like, no, no. He's like, no, totally. Turns sideways, pulls his hair back. Oh, yeah, that's you.
Yeah, it looks like he's spiffy. He's wearing a tie. Very 80s.
But does he have highlights?
He could have highlights.
More importantly, look how low that chair is to the ground.
Tell August we need to book the Maxell guy. Don't tell him anything more. He'll know what I'm talking about. LegalZoom, baby. Oh, man. See, you got to be responsible. You got to make a will. Otherwise, The government will take everything you have and put it in a huge tuna net and set it on fire over your grandparents' burial site. Did you know that?
What if they're spread ashes out at sea?
Then they'll just do it at sea.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. All right. Monica, thank you very much for coming in.
Great to be here, guys.
The Entrepreneurial Instinct is the name of the book, available on Amazon. You know what to do. Also, Irvine Improv, us and the amazing Jonathan on stage tomorrow. Waukegan, me doing stand-up on September 28th, on sale now at the Genesee Theater. Road Hard. Jeez, it was going so well with Cranston, then it just really took a turn. Anyway, we're up for another, I don't know, 10 days or so, and looking to blow right past that $1 million mark. So thank you so much. Fundanything.com/Adam. So until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Brian Cranston, Monica Mehta, Allison Rosen, and Bald Brian saying, mahalo.